This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody. Jason here again. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show. Welcome to part three of my conversation with Dr. Bonnie Guy from Appalachian State. Dr. Bonnie, are you excited? Are you ready? Absolutely. You still energized for this part? We're going to talk about the future of sales.
Sure am. Thanks.
So I can't wait. If you are tuning into this and you didn't check out the first two parts, check out the first part on authenticity, the second part on persuasion. Make sure to check those out. Make sure to check out the program that she's a part of and what they're focused on. She is coming to the podcast today with a sales background and then over 30 years of time in academia teaching students, and specifically as the professor of marketing and then the director of professional selling program at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. And her goal lines up with my goal, where she is teaching the sales people the future of sales and helping them become professionals. And that sales is actually about professional value creation. And so really excited for this. So Dr. Bonnie, when I mentioned the future of sales, and we won't get to the technology piece, let's talk about it now. What do you see as what salespeople should just continue to do more and more of as things change, right? Especially if people are tuning in and they caught part one, like what sales was involved when you were selling before academia, right? So 30 plus years ago versus now, and people's access to information. Where do you see that going with the future of what salespeople should be focused on?
I don't know if this comes across exactly the way I'm trying to position it, but a higher sense of professionalism, or seeing that role as a profession. You know, I know one of the things that the students, I don't know, I'm going to say if they fight it or whatever, but to some extent, there's certain numbers of people whose parents go, "What do you mean you're graduating and you're going to take a sales job? Like, why did we send you to college?" Like that sales is just something that anybody can go out and just wing it. And you just have to be a good talker, or you just have to be good with people. Obviously those things are not irrelevant. And even some of my, not so much now, but you know, even some of my colleagues that, I respect a lot, like a lot, do great things. You know, I've had them ask me, you know, like, why should we be offering a program in this? Like, in other words, I guess they see it as a trade, or they just see it as that myth of you're a born salesperson or you're not. So to me, you know, sales is or should be a profession, not a trade. And anybody who's really good at their profession continues to build skills, and they continue to grow and adapt, and they, you know, continue to get better at the things that they do. to me, because I would say 80% of decent sales jobs that are not like you talk about the order taker, that aren't order taker jobs, are probably business to business sales. So the best business-to-business salesperson should know something about business and how it runs and what the risks and pitfalls are and what people in different positions in business are trying to accomplish and what gets in their way. And, you know, so if I'm going to come to you as a prospect or customer and say, hey, I'm going to be, this is consultative selling, I'm going to be a strategic ally, you know, like I'm going to help you advance your business goals, then I can't just be out there winging it just because I can smile and tell a good joke and, you know, take you to lunch, or I'm somebody you like being around. That's all well and good. So what I just see, not only from a philosophy of selling, but the number of sales education programs, not just that we're teaching a class in sales or we're teaching a class in sales management, the number of formalized sales education curriculums across colleges and universities has grown geometrically in the last 15 years. something that we just haven't seen. And I think that's a real positive, just again, because we're emphasizing that this is not just a function, not just a trade, not just an entry-level position. This is a professional, it's either a career or it's part of your career path. And it's a true professional thing that you need to take pride in, and you need to build your skills and your knowledge and your expertise up in order to be who you need to be and do what you need to do.
I love what you said, which is, it's fascinating to think about it. I kind of take it for granted from my side with my experience, but where people go into a sale, professional sales job, right? Just say job, where it's B2B. So they're selling to a business, but they have no idea how business works. They've never been a part of a business. They have no behind the scenes. They have no understanding, right? And then they're trying to sell this business some, let's say, a software or a solution. And they're just going blind. They're just going based off what the company taught them in training and what they taught them about the product or solution. And they just think it's amazing. And they're going to go out there and try to sell it to people. And they literally have no idea how business works, what that person might be facing, the structures of businesses. And I can really see that value of where somebody who is taking classes on business and sales and then goes into that professional sales role, it's like, okay, now you have some insight. You might not have been a part of organizations yet, but at least you have some insight. And I think that's so valuable what you're saying.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see how that happens, but I do see sales being more of a profession, less of a trade, more, like we talked about before, you still have the arm twisters and, you know, the hard sellers and things like that. But I think more and more, and especially in B2B salespeople, if you're providing value, we talked about this before, why don't they buy? And I think the question is, why won't they engage with you? And they're, even if they haven't bought from you yet, if you provided them value in the decision-making process and you provide them value maybe in between because you pick up on things you see in an article or something that a best practice you've learned about and I pass it along to you because we've spent some time working together before, even though you didn't buy from me. If I send you an email or call you up and say, Jason, you know, ran across something the other day I think you might really be interested in. I know you're really busy, but could you spare 15 minutes? What are the odds you're going to say yes? You know, when I build that up, you're going to say, sure. Like pretty much every time I interact with her, I come away with something of value. So why wouldn't I do that? and so I just think sales is should be, and I think is, I'm hopeful it's headed more in that direction. In terms of what it is as a profession, and that buyers, salespeople are no longer people that buyers just in general avoid and want to run away from and tell the gatekeeper, oh, tell them I'm out of town, tell them I'm in a meeting, tell them, you know, I'm at the dentist, or, you know, that at least the right salespeople, they're finding it valuable simply even to spend time engaging.
So you mentioned something about sales moving towards being a profession. So I mention this a lot and it triggers people, but sales is not actually a profession, right? There's no professional standards, code of ethics, barrier to entry, testing, exam, you know, malpractice insurance.
Not like a lawyer or a doctor or an engineer.
Or even a plumber, right? Like a plumber, a general contractor, an electrician. There's that is actually more of a profession, even a trade, but it's also a profession because there's entry, and then there's rules, and then there's consequences, which sales is you just show up and say and do whatever you want. And, you know, to some degree. So what's interesting is that obviously part of the movement with, you know, higher education, teaching sales and having these programs, like you said, is moving it towards that. Where do you see that happening? Or when do you think that might happen where sales moves into actually being a profession? You have any idea on that or insight?
I really don't. You know, I'm trying to think of, so like if I'm in financial advising, I can get a certification. I'm a certified financial planner, or you know, any, and I don't know, you know, would we have something like that in the sales profession? And if we did, I'm not even sure what that would look like. Like I'm not even in a financial advising, and I know what kind of things would probably, the boxes you'd probably have to check for that. Right. And I can see some overlap there, but no, I don't know. I think some of that is just we're at a place where people's thought processes or perceptions are shifting to that. And, you know, I don't know what happens after that, honestly.
Well, and it's a tough one because, and I know there's many universities focused on that, and like Terry Lowe is really spearheading. He's taught me a lot about the line of where professions are and where that happens. I think one of the challenges with sales is that it's part art, part science, right? Like when you're an electrician or a plumber or a dentist, like there's mostly science, right? It's not much art, right? There might be finesse to it, but it's science. And so like how could you make a professional standard for all of sales, given the wide range of people in sales, and what would that look like? So anyway, that's a question I know nobody has an answer to yet, but I was just curious what you think. What do you see buyers wanting more of or less of, which probably be a lot of the themes we've already talked about.
Right. They don't want canned products, canned solutions. They actually want the salesperson to know more than they do, because if they don't, then what can, you know, what value are you bringing? We talk about professional value creators. I used that term before. I forget where I first heard that, but I really like it. In fact, if I had my way, I would rename the College of Business to the College of Professional Value Creation. You know, because it'd be a, you know, a different way of thinking of that and really position that differently. But so our products or services bring value, but I also think that our goal should be to bring value in the decision-making process, regardless of what the ultimate buying decision is. So I think in my philosophy, that's a direction we should be headed in. And I sort of see that, but I'm not sure how that continues to evolve and how, if there's a way to standardize that. You know, when I work with partners and salespeople and whatnot, as I have salespeople, all my students have to do a mentored sales project. So they find somebody who sells something and they focus on that within the bounds of the project. And I love how salespeople, like how often they tell me, oh, you know, I know this is, but what I do is so different. Like they, and to some extent they're right. You know, sales looks really different if you're looking to sell Gallo wine products into a bar or restaurant than if you're selling plumbing supplies to, you know, contractors, or you're selling med devices to surgeons. Yes, it is different, but that's the one commonality, is that it is all different to some extent. And that's why I think that idea of, well, how do we standardize certain things? Yeah, I mean, ethical standards, that shouldn't be too hard, but you know, how do you certify somebody's a certified professional value creator, if we want to call it that? You know, what boxes are they going to check, and how do we measure that? Because as you said, some of it's science, some of it's process, and some of it is, it's so much based on human interaction that, you know, it's an interesting question to ask. I don't think I have the answer.
I love it. I think, you know, the basis of where I think the what the people, buyers, consumers, customers want in the future and now instantly is the value creation, right? Again, in my opinion, if somebody knows what they want to buy and they want to buy it, they're just looking for an order taker, or they'll just order it online. If somebody is going through the process of dealing with a salesperson, like you said, that most people generally have an impulse to avoid, then what they're looking for is value. They're looking for guidance and wisdom and something else. And I think that's important. Now, one other part, when we talk about the future of sales is the technology, right? The way that sales is done, the sales tech that's available, sales enablement, AI, like all of these different things. This is a fun question for you because, you know, when you sold before getting into the academic world, right, that wasn't a lot of technology, not a lot of sales tools, versus now, right? So what are you seeing that, you know, you're having your students go through? What do you see that, you know, they are using and they like? Where do you see the future of sales tech? Like, where are you seeing that from your program?
Well, students are too inexperienced and have little frame of reference to really, one, know what those technologies are. We start teaching them those things. And why they should get excited, because they don't have a frame of reference for what it was like before we had that. I would say, in general terms, the most exciting thing to me about technology and sales is, and this is not a unique thought of my own. This actually comes out of a video. I don't know if it was created, but it's distributed through the Sales Education Foundation. But it's called The Science of Sales. We watch it in our class. They're saying is, you know, prior to technology, where we can aggregate data, we can aggregate the inputs, the outputs, you know, techniques and processes and how people respond to that and whatnot. So then you always had a sales team with your rock stars, right? And some of that was just... like, I think almost anybody can be a successful salesperson, but honestly, you know, some people they're born on second base, if you want to use that analogy, right? And so you have a sales team and you got one or a few rock stars, and almost everything they touch turns to gold. But how do you, and then you have your B players, and maybe they're decent, but they don't have that kind of output or success. And then you have your C players. They're just the people in the revolving door that come and go. And so that before was like, how do you take a series of anecdotes, or how do you take somebody's personal experience, and then how you translate that in a way to take your B players and make them as productive or nearly as successful as the A players? And so the most exciting thing, I think, for not only individuals and companies is that data analytics and ways of, like, even CRM systems in a company, you can aggregate, you can see, you can track, like, what lead methods we're using, or, you know, how many times this technique is processed and what the outcomes are, or even... templates for emails or whatever it is, but we can aggregate what works and doesn't work. It's not like we're trying to make everybody robots, but we get a much better idea. It's no longer anecdotal sort of information, and we can aggregate that, and we can use it to train and to coach the B players to be as good, or at least almost as good, as the A players. So you're not relying as a company on one or two people to carry your sales force. And then for the sake of the B players, they all want to make good money, and they want to feel valuable, and they want to feel like they're good at what they do. So, you know, it's good for them too. So apart from a specific technology, the fact that we have technology that allows us to aggregate data and come to reasonably trustable conclusions about things, not only saves salespeople time, but it allows your team to produce on more equal footing. You know, there's always going to be some differences, but allows you to elevate people who in the past would have already just always stayed at that B level, and they'd be serviceable and fine, but allows you to be able to do that with people.
And I love that. I think that's so true, right? Is where is technology and tools that can come in, you know, as something to help elevate somebody just to the next level, right? Like you got to have the fundamentals. Like I say all the time, is you could give me the best golf clubs in the world and it's not going to matter. I'm still not very good because my fundamentals are bad. But at a certain level, if I were a C or a B level golfer, and then you give me better clubs or you give me some different technology, then that could elevate me up a little bit, right? I'm never going to be a superstar golfer, but could do better. And I love that use of the technology. Where do you see the, let's say the different channels, the omni channel, right? And not just phone calls, but, you know, email, chat, SMS, you know, where do you see that going? Where do you see students liking to use it? Are they excited to get on phone calls? Are they defaulting to, you know, the online modes? Like, what do you see?
It's a two-sided coin, or, you know, the double-edged sword. Students don't like to use the phone primarily because they don't even use it in their own personal interactions much anymore. Right. And so one of the things I have to convince them is that you need to reach out and do some business by the phone. It's still a thing. Yeah, there's other modes of communication, but just endlessly bombarding somebody with emails or, you know, text message are fine, but whatever the modes of communication are and however technology changes them, the most important thing is that I tell students, use multiple modes of reaching out to prospects or customers you don't have a history with, and then pay really close attention to which ones they prefer and respond either qualitatively better or sooner or faster or more often. And you know, that's something, even a category I would have in your CRM is, right, you know, Tom loves it when I just email him. He never returns a phone call. He doesn't even listen to my voicemails, but, you know, he's great at email. Or, you know, well, they'll, you know, we're at a point in our relationship where that they'll just say, hey, just text me. The texting is a little touchy because sometimes I think there's a personal level of that. And some prospects or buyers go, look, every single nook and cranny of my life is open to the public. And if you're texting me, you better be somebody like we get. So it was junk mail. Now it's junk email. And it's like, is there some place we can communicate with people that we're just not bombarded constantly with people we didn't invite there who want to sell us something or send some kind of message? So I think all of those things are great because customers are going to prefer different things. And there's different technologies and there are different ways to reach out. But take LinkedIn, for example. It is a professional social media. And I do encourage my students to learn how to use it and to have profiles and, you know, do various things there. But I said, if you're just going to reach out and connect with somebody and they say yes, and the next thing they know, they're getting a long behind the scenes message from you that's basically just prospecting. I've had people that I say mostly I won't accept connection requests anymore unless maybe there's some people I know, a certain number of people in a certain vein we know together. And even though I don't know you, then maybe I'll do that. Or if you send me a little note and you tell me why you're interested in connecting, I might do that. But I've gotten burned before too with, it's like the last one was a financial advisor. And sometimes for me, I don't know why people want to connect. So I want to be connected with people in sales and things because a lot of times they can help my students or they, you know, they have something of value to contribute to the program or my learning. But, you know, it's the very next day and I'm just getting a pitch about, you know, how don't I need a financial advisor? It's like, yes, I do. That's why I already have one, or, you know, and then never hear from them again. And that was the only reason they wanted to connect. So again, a long answer to one question, but I just think you have to find out which modes of communication work, but also be really sensitive to the fact that people want parts of their life in which commercial activity doesn't intrude. And just because you want to make a sale doesn't mean they're going to respond just because you know their cell number and you could text them, right? That might be a big turnoff. So I think there are certain ways you have to be far enough along into the relationship to sort of use sort of some of those methods. Because if I don't know you, I don't want you bombarding me through those methods.
And I love that tip that you said is to actually have that as a field or some option within a CRM, which is what's the preferred mode? If there's one mode, what does this person respond to? Because I find that as well, even with the people that I engage with from a consulting side, some are like, I can expect an email reply like 24 seconds later, right? Like I know they will. Some people never reply to emails, but I know they're on LinkedIn. Some people it's text. Some people it's none of those. Like they're a phone call person. If I text them a question, they call me because they just want to talk. And so like tracking that, that's a brilliant idea. I think that's great. And I think, like you said, test all of it, figure out what somebody's mode is. And then, you know, again, this is where omnichannel is important. And all of these things are so important in the future, which is obviously now, which for salespeople to understand is it's all about what the customer wants, what that buyer wants as their journey and their communication mode, ultimately ending with some kind of phone call, ultimately ending with a sale. But how do they want to get to that point and what's their process, right? Like, you know,
or what particular matter. So what are we doing? Is this a reminder about an appointment or is this a proposal or is this talking through some options, you know, whatever task we're on, that in and of itself may dictate which mode of communication is better. So you just want to send me a reminder, an email or text is fine. You know, if you you want to talk about something else entirely, then maybe it is a phone call or maybe it's set up a Zoom meeting or maybe it's, you know, I don't know. But as your point, you know, it's not about what you said. So what do students like to do? Well, I don't even really care because like you said, it's not about the salesperson. It's not about what I want to do or like to do. It's only about what you want or like to do. Otherwise I'm going to lose you. You know, you want to communicate the way you want to communicate. It's my job to adapt to that.
Especially when we circle all the way back around with the part that you said is that people in sales are professional value creators, right? So if you actually want to create value for someone, then you've got to do it somewhat on their terms or at least meet them where they are at to then move them forward and create value, right? You can't just dictate it on your terms, which some companies try to do, some salespeople try to do, some organizations try and say, oh, well, if you want to deal with us, it's on our terms. You're gonna play by our rules or else. Most people don't own a monopoly that people are willing to suffer through. And so you've got to meet people where they're at. So I love that. I think that's great. And of course, perfect place to end segment 3 on the future of sales. Dr. Bonnie, thank you for being here, especially for all this time and energy and effort on these 3 segments. And again, for everything you're doing with the students there at Appalachian State in their sales program. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for the chance to chat with you. It's been fun.
And for people tuning in, if you want, you can check out the show notes. If you haven't already connected with her, make sure to put a connection request in there. Put a message when you find Dr. Bonnie Guy on LinkedIn. Mention the show and please don't hit her with a instant sales pitch as a result of mentioning the show and then hit her with a bunch of crap. Please don't. Like, nobody likes that. But please connect with her, follow her, just check out the content, be a part of the program. It's in the show notes, but if you want, you can Google Appalachian State Professional Selling Program. Find the URL. Like I said, it's in the show notes as well. And get involved. If you're in the area, you want to be a corporate sponsor, you want to be a mentor, you want to be a coach, you're a student in the program, or you want to get into a sales program, please check that out. If you're anywhere around there or just want to move to North Carolina and be a part of it, again, not a paid product placement or endorsement, but programs like this are what the world needs, what we all need and want as customers in the world is to actually know that when you speak with a salesperson, they are going to be more of a professional and actually create value, which is everything that Dr. Bonnie was talking about, which is also part of my mission of filling the world with authentic persuaders. And thank you everyone for tuning in. Appreciate you being a part of this. And thank you for helping fill the world with those authentic persuaders.